You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 213 by Rudolf Steiner, 13 lectures entitled Human Questions and Cosmic Answers, translated by Elizabeth Marshall. This is the third lecture given in Dornach on the 30th of June, 1922. I would just like to draw your attention with a few words to what I discussed here last Sunday. It was about the relationship of the human being to the world, inasmuch as I spoke about the unfolding of the human will, how it finds its way out into the vastness of the world, along the lines of light which shine down from the sun to the earth. So that we can say that something from earthly humanity, the unfolding of the will, is radiating out into space counter to the direction of the light. In contrast, the thought-like descends to the earth, in a sense, with the waves of moonlight. We could go on to show that what spreads out when the human body disintegrates has a will-like character, and flows out into the cosmos counter to the flow of light, and how the human being returns again to earthly existence on the stream of the thought element along the lines of light and all that emanates from the moon. Now, of course, for this idea of the will element, the light element, the thought element, and the element of moonlight, as well as for what I will say in this vein today, we have to realize that when we speak of these things and use the idea of a world edifice as an illustration, we only mean it as an illustration. You should not imagine that in all I have said here, the physical sun and the physical moon are anything other than symbols of what happens spiritually. We can describe the actual relationship as follows. I would like to portray this historically, although I could do it differently. I would like to make it clear for you what descriptions, such as the one I am about to make, mean exactly. You know that more materialistic, oriented thinking sees the origins of our universe in a kind of cosmic cloud. This means that through this thinking bound to the material, people have the idea that our cosmos, as far as we can grasp it, our solar system, has developed out of a kind of cloud nebula, which then formed a ball and contracted into what is now the solar system. And there's a diagram. Now, after all you have heard in the course of our studies of anthroposophy, it will be quite clear to you that this cannot be the whole picture. Regardless of how you modify this materialistic description of the origins of the universe with various forces or similar, this cannot be the whole truth, since whatever the nebula cloud of the Kant-Laplace hypothesis or some other theory contains, and what can then develop according to the laws of aerodynamics, could never lead to the formation of what lives on the earth as animal and human souls, not even of plants and their growth. When we make such an interpretation, then we are dealing with an abstraction, even if it is a materialistic abstraction. It has to be clear that the spiritual is inherent in what materialistic thinking sees as the primeval cloud, and that this primeval cloud is only the outer material expression of the spiritual. Therefore, if it is to be a full description, the existence and weaving of the spiritual must also be included. So when we look at the primeval cloud of Kant-Laplace, we have to complete it by thinking of it as the body of something soul-spiritual, a soul-spiritual, however, which does not have a unified nature as does the human being, that is manifold, multiform, but still something soul-spiritual. The observations and hypotheses of mere materialistic thinking do not go further back than this primeval cloud. Now, let us imagine that not we, but other beings, beings from the future, would develop ideas about the origins of the universe in which they live, or will live, based on this materialistic thinking. This is not a question of whether what I am now saying is real or not. It is just to illustrate my train of thought. So we assume that beings in the distant future view this Kant-Laplace cloud as the beginning of the universe. Where would it then be on a time scale? In order that the idea can become clear, when such future beings look back, they must assume that our Earth, our solar system, had long perished. Space had become, in a sense, free. And in this free space, they would have to postulate the Kant-Laplace cloud of a future world. For as long as our solar system exists, we obviously cannot assume that there is a Kant-Laplace cloud in the same space. I will construct the example so that these beings, who are developing a materialistic theory of the future, locate their Kant-Laplace primeval cloud in place of our solar system. According to what we have said, the soul spiritual must also be in this Kant-Laplace cloud of the future. It would just have to be the physical form of a cosmic soul spiritual. Where would this soul spiritual come from? What lies behind it? I will draw a schematic diagram. Here's a picture. This would be the soul spiritual physical of our Kant-Laplace primeval cloud. And then, in the future, there would be the Kant-Laplace primeval cloud of the future beings I was talking about. This Kant-Laplace nebula would contain the soul spiritual. Where would this come from? Now, if this Kant-Laplace primeval cloud were where our own solar system had been, then it would have developed. It would have enclosed a cosmic soul spiritual. This soul spiritual would be what was left over from the solar system we were living in. So, we would live our solar system, as we have it now, to its end. It would then disperse into the cosmos. The soul spiritual would remain and would then embody itself in the new Kant-Laplace primeval nebula. In other words, what I have described here would depict the development of Jupiter. But the soul spiritual, within this Jupiter development, would be what had been prepared during the existence of humanity on the Earth. Equally, we would be able to go back beyond the Kant-Laplace primeval cloud of the Earth to the soul spiritual contained within it, and that was prepared by the beings who existed in the moon phase. Thus, when you look at our present solar system, then it is, in a certain sense, the outer embodiment of what has disappeared from the old moon existence, or what has transformed itself from the old moon existence to that of the Earth. In turn, what we are sending out into the cosmos is preparing the Jupiter existence. Hence, when we look at the external solar system, in reality, we always have something that is the work of an earlier phase of existence. Therefore, when I am speaking of the light that shines down upon us from the physical sun, then I am talking about something that comes to us from the past. And when I speak of the will streams which flow counter to the light rays, then I am talking about something which is preparing the future. So that the cosmic clockwork, I call it that, so as to have an expression for what is happening spiritually, has been prepared by the moon, and what I have described as the spiritual is already the basis for what will live on into Jupiter existence. But you should not say that the present-day sun, that we see with our eyes outside in space, is attracting the human will. This physical sun is only a symbol for the sun-like toward which the human will flows. Equally, the physical moon is just a physical symbol for the moon-like, which constantly pours out in thought streams into Earth existence. You have to follow these thoughts if you want to understand properly what it means when, in the following, I talk about cosmic relationships, which express as images what is happening spiritually through humanity on the Earth. And I have to add something to what I have already said. When we take our whole solar system seen from the Earth, we have the sun, we have Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, and so on as outer planets. The others are not so important. And closer to the Earth than to the sun, the moon, Venus, Mercury. And there's a diagram. Now, stay with what I have said about the will of humanity flowing from the earth out into the cosmos toward the sun, and also that when the body disintegrates, then the soul also moves out into the cosmos along this will element. Thus our will-like element arrives first at the sun existence, at the sphere of the sun. Now, you know that what I am presenting here as a fact had been discovered by the ancient initiates. They committed their questions to the stream of will, sending them toward the sun, and then in turn they received the answers from the moon in the form of thoughts. So that what I have here described to you can be taken as an established fact. And again, we have to connect to the old mysteries if we want to go further in our explorations. Look at this fact once more. The initiates of the old mysteries send out their riddle questions. They commit them to the stream flowing toward the sun's rays. They wait, and after a while, they receive the answers from the moon. In this respect, they are speaking with the cosmos. Now, through this process, the old seers only received certain answers, those which were related to the structure of the cosmos itself. Thus, what was contained in the old, more primitive wisdom, which despite being dreamlike was of course an exalted wisdom, that was accomplished by sending out the questions in the opposite direction to the sun's rays and then receiving the answers. These were the answers to questions concerning the structure of the universe, the forces at work in the universe, and so on. In short, they received everything related to physical considerations, astronomical considerations, the music of the spheres, and so on, all that was known in the ancient sciences about these aspects. However, these old initiates sent out other questions into the cosmos. For example, they knew the art of sending out questions as far as Mars, the Mars sphere. In the period when Mars was visible in the heavens, they sent out their questions counter to the rays from Mars. Now, when they sent questions out to Mars, they did not await the answers from the moon. They awaited the answers when Venus was visible at such an angle that she seemed to be looking at Mars. The important point here is that they awaited the answers to the questions they had sent out to Mars from Venus. And furthermore, they awaited the answers to questions sent out to Jupiter from Mercury. They awaited the answers to the questions they sent out to Saturn, in a sense into the vastness of space, from the fixed stars, or from what in ancient times represented the fixed stars, the zodiac itself. But what was in these questions that the old initiates sent out in this way into the cosmos, and whose answers they then awaited? These were not the abstract scientific truths concerning the structure of the universe, which I mentioned to you before. They were those questions the old initiates wanted to ask the divine spiritual beings directly. To Mars, they directed questions addressing the angel beings and awaited the answers from Venus. To Jupiter, they directed questions to the archangel beings and awaited the answers from Mercury. And to Saturn, they directed questions to the archai beings, the primordial forces, and awaited the answers from the zodiac. Now, while in a certain sense they spoke directly with the cosmos, in a more abstract form, I would say an impersonal form, the way they spoke was such that they could retain consciousness. They spoke with real divine spiritual beings, and they received their individual statements. In this way, they received the declarations of will of the choir of the angels, the choir of the archangels, the choir of the archai. What was resolved as discourse between the sun, the moon, and the initiates was related to the externa of the cosmos. What was communicated through the other planets and the zodiac had to do with the spiritual inhabitants of the cosmos. So we know for a fact that human beings are constantly interacting with the cosmos, not just with its external structure, but with the inhabitants of the cosmos. The old initiates knew that when, for example, they directed their powers out toward Mars, It would not be sufficient to send out mere riddle questions. Such riddle questions would only go as far as the sun, and the answers would only come from the moon. If the old seers wanted to direct questions toward Mars, they could not do so by merely thinking. Rather, they had to create formulas in a certain way, recitatives, mantras, which they could speak out loud. These were then sent out and formed what set Mars in motion, so that the answers which they could hear through a kind of inner listening would come back from Venus. If they wanted to direct questions to Jupiter, then this last was also not enough. Rather, they had to fulfill certain sacrificial rites in a specific ceremonial form. And what then flowed out into the universe as, let us say, the cosmic thought form of this sacrificial rite, that came back from Venus as certain signs that the old initiates knew how to interpret. When they were inspired by Venus and had sent out questions to Jupiter, then they could interpret these signs. When they were inspired by Mercury, then they could interpret the corresponding signs. These signs were very diverse. Someone not inspired by Mercury would see nothing in them. If they were inspired by Mercury, they knew, when I encounter this or that event, then it is this or that answer to a question posed through a sacrificial rite. This is how natural events and also historical events, which otherwise only appeared to people as natural processes or historic processes, gained a certain substance. They could, in a way, be read. What had been put to Saturn as a question was particularly difficult, since it could only be asked by people performing complicated rites. In the old mysteries, this would usually be done by the teachers of the mysteries giving their students a certain mission, a mission in which the student would dedicate their life to performing certain actions. The questions directed at Saturn consisted of these actions performed often over years by such a student, and the answers came back from the zodiac. When the old initiates and their students practiced these prayers, meditations, and sacred rites of the ancient mysteries, it was really as if they were being woven into the fabric of the cosmos. There was nothing which would be completed in a short space of time. Rather, everything that went on over the years in such mysteries was continuous striving for knowledge, or striving to create the right impulses for human actions. By looking into these processes, we gain an impression of how those forces that we can describe as the forces of the Sun, of Mars, of Jupiter, Saturn, the Moon, Venus, or Mercury, affect human beings and of their significance for humanity. The meaning of the forces of the Sun for human beings, you can see this from what I have said before, is that in a certain way they attract the human will toward the Sun, and they draw up human beings themselves. When they have died, out toward the cosmos and through the cosmos into the spiritual world. The forces of the moon bring that organization into human beings, which enables them to think, to reflect. But they are also those forces which carry human beings down from the spiritual world again and through the etheric sphere, when they must find their way into their earthly incarnation. Similarly, we can give other forces the names of the celestial bodies which represent them, and look at how they affect human beings. Let us take, for example, the forces of Mercury. These forces are not concentrated solely in the celestial body of Mercury. They fill out the whole of space accessible to us, and the physical body of Mercury is just the concentrated mineral embodiment of these Mercury forces. Imagine that we had filled up our whole solar system with the forces of Mercury. There's a diagram. They permeate all the bodies of the solar system, including us humans. But where Mercury is to be found in the heavens, they are just concentrated physically, minerally, so that we can see them. However, they are everywhere. Now take the forces of Venus, which are also everywhere. But just at a certain point where we can see Venus, they are physically, minerally concentrated. This is how it is with all these forces. In reality, they permeate each other, Venus, Mars, Mercury, and so on, but their mineral concentrations are to be found at specific locations. If by learning to recognize Mercury, we gradually develop an idea of how he gives answers for Jupiter, then we also learn to recognize the unconscious meaning of these Mercury forces for human beings. To take a simple example, when we want to walk, we have to use certain forces so that the spirit can inform the bones and the muscles. We have to penetrate the physical. We have to get into the solid part of our bodies, into all the solid components of our bodies, with the soul spiritual. That we are able to do this is due to the forces of Mercury. So we can say the following. Firstly, the Mercury forces allow human beings to take possession of the solid parts of their bodies. If there were no Mercury forces, then we would always be outside the solid parts of our bodies. Secondly, the Venus forces allow human beings to take possession of the fluid parts of their bodies. You already know that you consist of up to 90% water. If there were no Venus forces in the world, as a spirit, you would only be able to continually circle around this column of water. You could not take possession of it. Thirdly, the Moon forces allow us to take possession of the aeriform content of the body. We can realize these things by studying cosmology. Now we can know further in these studies, as did the ancient initiates, despite their having only a primitive knowledge, a kind of dreamy clairvoyance. Let us say, for example, that through their cosmological studies, they found out that the Venus forces allow human beings to take possession of the fluid element in their bodies. Then they experimented. They waited until they found a human being who had difficulty taking possession of their fluid element. This can lead to certain illnesses. For example, a certain illness develops when a person is not able to properly grasp just the one organ of their fluid being. So, these old initiates asked themselves, what remedy is there for this? If a person was not properly attuned to the Venus forces, when taking possession of their fluid element was not functioning properly, then they saw that they had to use copper as the remedy. So by finding out that copper helped, that it helped the soul spiritual take possession of the body, that it worked just like the Venus forces, they discovered that the same forces were at work in the metal copper as were at work in the Venus sphere. This is how they could connect the metal copper with Venus. Furthermore, when it was a case of someone being ill because they could not properly grasp their solid components, then they found out that they had to use mercury or quicksilver. Thus they discovered the equivalence between the metals and the planets. Today all plausible accounts describe this equivalence, but no one asks themselves why Venus corresponds to copper, and so on. This was all based on legitimate research. Therefore, when someone speaks knowledgeably about copper as a medicine, they have this knowledge from the study of the relationship between the human being and the cosmos. When, for example, someone is talking about whether a metal occurring in a certain plant is a medicine for some complaint or other, then they should look at the whole relationship of this plant to the cosmos. And from this relationship of the plant to the cosmos, and in turn of the cosmos to the human being, they can gain insight into the workings of the plant as a remedy. It is easy to understand why there is a certain reluctance nowadays to admit to these things. The modern approach, albeit open to question, is to learn all you need to know as a healer in 5 or 6 years. This is not possible. We have to go on learning continuously. But people want to be finished in 5 or 6 years and do not want to admit that they could learn much more, so that they develop resistance to what seems to have no end. However, despite our usual thinking, the world has no end, neither extensively nor intensively. With the Mars forces, it is a case not of helping us take possession of the etheric warmth forces, but that they protect us from the warmth element in the cosmos. Fourthly, the Mars forces keep us from dissolving into the warmth element. If the Mars forces did not exist in the necessary way, then human beings would dissolve into the warmth element. The forces of Mars hold us together in the face of the warmth element. This is actually the most important force in human beings, as we have more warmth in us than is in our environment, so that we are constantly in danger of flowing out into the warmth element. That is most important. Therefore, the Mars forces in human beings must be concentrated, and this happens because of the iron in the blood. Iron contains forces corresponding to those of Mars, which hold us together against dissolving into the warmth. Human beings do not have the other forces, those of Jupiter and Saturn, within themselves in the same way. They are also in us, but in another form, not directly traceable. However, some of the recent research, including that of natural science, should get people thinking about these things. I will speak about this tomorrow. Fifthly, the Jupiter forces protect human beings from dissolving into the element of light, in the light ether. Human beings would become clouds of light, flowing ever outward, if there were no corresponding Jupiter forces. Sixthly, the forces of Saturn protect human beings from flowing out into the chemical ether. These Saturn forces, working on human beings, are really forces related, in a sense, to innermost human nature. Usually we speak figuratively when we say someone is sweet or someone is sour. But this is not just figurative. Rather, when someone seems sour in a moral or a physical way, this is partly connected to their chemical configuration. And the Saturn forces are part of this chemical configuration. How a person lives from out of their organism depends on how Saturn affects them. So, in fact, someone is melancholic because of the way they are settled into their chemical constitution, in what is cooked up in the liver, in the gallbladder, and in the stomach. Melancholia is based on a certain settling in to the chemical configuration. And this is based in turn on the forces of Saturn being particularly strongly developed in such a person. So we can say that human beings appear to be concentrated within their skin, but that in reality this is only illusion. In reality, human beings are part of the whole cosmos, and we can show in detail how the cosmos has its part in their shaping. You can see that the planets close to the sun are connected more to the physical in human beings, the solid, the fluid, the air. The planets further away from the sun are more connected to the etheric elements in the human being. The sun itself divides the one from the other. The forces of Mercury, Venus, and the moon bring us to the solid, to the fluid, to the aeriform. Those of Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn protect us from flowing out into the warmth, the light, and the chemical. As you can see, these are polar effects, and between them, so that they do not cause chaos, is the element of the sun. The forces of Mars would work unrestrainedly, and they would affect, for example, the moon forces, if the sun was not between them as a kind of partition, which prevents them from coming together. Without this, the Mars forces would help humans to be independent of the warmth element, but what had become independent would have to take possession of the air, and would become an air wraith. In order that both processes can take place separately, so that human beings can grasp their aeriform, organic gestalt, on the one hand, and on the other can live independently in the warmth element, the two forces must be separated. The sun is between them. This also the old initiates knew well. When, for example, a person developed a certain sickness because of the Mars forces working too strongly in them, so that in a sense they broke through the sun element and the person was living too strongly in the air element because they could grasp it more strongly, then the two elements had to be separated. To achieve this, they used aurum. In order to prevent the forces of Mars and those of the moon from flowing into each other, the sun forces had to be strengthened. This led to using aurum, which reharmonized the organism, so that what was not supposed to flow together was separated. From all this you will be able to see that knowledge of the world is not possible without knowledge of the human being, and knowledge of the human being is not possible without knowledge of the world, particularly not when we are concerned with the scientific practice of healing. The end of Lecture 3.